Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Quest Love Trilogy, Volume 1, Love, Passion, and Soul. Featuring Barbara DeAngelis.
I think the search for love throughout history has truly been an expression of our spiritual quest.
Erica Jong.
I mean, this is the crisis of the late 20th century, men and women living together and never finding time to be alone with each other and be intimate. So you have to really say, this is a priority in my life.
John Gray.
And we don't have an understanding of why sex is sacred. Sex is a physical union between man and woman. It is when we've united emotionally, mentally, on a soul level, we're connected.
Marianne Williamson.
I think romantic love is a place where we seek to complete ourselves in each other. And that mutual need, I think, is not neurotic, but rather deep and profound and beautiful and glorious.
Thomas Moore.
It's about letting one's love open up to the point where your life is fashioned by the fact that you have not closed off your capacity to love.
Harvill Hendricks.
I call romantic love a taste of the elixir of our being. It is the taste of what we would really feel and experience all the time if we weren't repressed, if some parts of us weren't shut down, shut off as a result of social conditioning. So romantic love gives us that taste of what it's like to be fully alive.
Six of today's influential thinkers share their breakthrough views on love and relationships, hosted by Lily Fournier.
In this quest, we explore our eternal yearning for love, to love and to be loved, and our thirst for passion, not just sexual, but to feel vital, alive, and free to be who we are.
Love, passion, and soul.
When I marry people, as I often have, like perform a ceremony, I will point out to the man, obviously this woman is God's gift to you, but she's not God's gift to you alone. She's here in your life so that through the radical relaxation she can experience in your arms and in your love, she might become more for the world than she would have been had she not met you. And same with the woman, I'll say, God, I agree, you probably feel he's this gift from God to you, and yes, that's true, but God sent him to you not only so he would be greater, but so that he would show up greater for the entire world, because in your love, he will become more of a man. He will become the man he is most capable of being through being loved by you. That's the purpose.
When you really give yourself to the invitation to open your life up to another person, and not just live in this self-contained world of your own, but to do that, that mysteriously, this is the beginning of your self-discovery. This is the beginning of finding out that you have a life and that what that life is. That's the beginning of it.
I think relationships are assignments that literally God makes. When two people have the maximal potential for learning from each other and becoming, I think that there's a grand drama that occurs on this earth, and this is the drama of the unfoldment of souls.
The real secret of an incredible relationship has absolutely nothing to do with the other person. It has to do with you. You can only love as much as your heart is capable of loving, not just that person, but anything. There's only one door to the heart. You can't keep it closed to all kinds of people and all kinds of things and all kinds of situations, but think, well, the right person, then I'll open it for him. It doesn't work that way. It's one door.
So here's the interesting paradox, that when we give ourselves to this person, that is not it's not a loss of self there. There's a gaining of soul in that process, a gaining of identity, a gaining of security, and being who you are. If the other person can receive that, there is this mutuality. But of course, that means it's also full of fear, because I think all of us quite naturally will have a great reticence to give ourselves that much, because you're afraid, well, it won't be received, or it might be the wrong person, or, you know, there's a lot of possibilities there. So it's full of fear. That doesn't mean that it's not the thing to do.
So your ability to love, period, is the basis for a great relationship. How much am I capable of loving? How passionate am I about life? If you think the other person's going to do things to make you love them, that's a misunderstanding. Your love has a life of its own. And your ability to love has nothing to do, on one level, with if the person is pleasing you or not. It has to do with how much your heart is ready to just jump into the fire.
Never in history has passion been linked to marriage. This is an important thing. Most people don't know that. They see Hollywood, they see Cleopatra, they see all these movies, and they just assume that you're supposed to fall in love and stay in love and the passion grows over time. No way. Never in history has that happened, yet it is possible. That's why people are dreaming of it, because it is a new possibility that's coming into this world. As women start to feel and are more autonomous and independent, then their need for men is no longer for survival and security. What they start feeling a hunger for is connection and intimacy. And when a man learns how to provide connection and intimacy, when she learns how to give him the connection and intimacy he's looking for, suddenly you have the ground, the fertile ground for passion to continue happening.
Sexuality.
I think women and men are in real crisis at the end of the 20th century. Maybe it's time for us to communicate with each other differently. Maybe it is a power struggle on some level, but maybe it's also a communication problem. We don't know how to behave with each other. We have a whole generation of young women who don't know how to flirt. And they have been told they don't have to flirt. All they say to a guy is exactly what they feel all the time. And guess what? It doesn't work. Because, you know, since the days of the cave, since Mel Brooks's 2,000-year-old man, we have been flirting with each other. And it's that game that piques the sexuality. It's not dishonest either. It's just flirting.
Part of our moralism about sex, we seem to, we don't develop the arts of sex very well. We think flirting has to always end up in a bedroom somewhere. Oh, why not just be flirtatious people? Why not be, at any age, enjoy our sexuality?
One of the things that's so hard for women to understand is that there's certain differences and you can't change them. If you try to change them, it will not work. And that basic difference is the man needs to be the pursuer. If you pursue a man more than he pursues you, he becomes the pursued, and he loses touch with his ability to hunger for her, to want her, to be motivated to do things to get her. Men have to be driven. They have to find that there's a distance, and I have to cross over that distance. I have to get to her. I have to win her over. Now, lots of times women go, oh, but that's just playing games. That's playing games. I have to play hard to get. Don't play hard to get, but realize, what are your standards? Don't be so easy to get, that's all. Don't be so eager to please a man, but let him come for you.
I remember when it dawned on me that men were hunters and men had to pursue you. I was very old by the time I figured it out. And boy, does it work. I don't approve of it ideologically, but it works. Let him chase you, I say to my daughter. Let him miss you. Let him call you more than you call him. Let him wonder where you are when you're out at night. Don't tell him everything you're doing. And she used to criticize me and say that I was cynical and didn't know anything and I was out of touch with reality. And that's what she said to me 2 years ago. Things weren't like that anymore. People are honest now. And now she says, you know, Mom, it really works.
But the secret, when women go, well, how do I get him to pursue me? Be pursuable. Why? What do men pursue? They pursue a woman that they think I can make her happy. So every time you give a message to a man that he can make you happy, that he could be of help, that he can be of service to you, that he can be your knight in shining armor to some extent, give him that message and he'll want to be it. He'll pursue you. But what happens is women give men the message of, oh, I can help you and I'll do this for you. And she's trying to help him, trying to win his love. Whenever you try to win a man's love, you lose it. You let him win your love, And that's the secret. Make it easy for men to be successful in fulfilling you, but don't easily run after him.
I think in many ways, the liberation movement among women, in some ways we got some things wrong. I think that in many ways over the last 30 years, we interpreted liberation to mean that we could go out and be more like men. And so it really messed up women, it messed up men, and it messed up relationships. So I'm at this point pretty convinced that while it is appropriate that in certain areas of our lives, particularly in our professional lives, women carry a kind of masculine role, the giver rather than the receiver. I think when it comes to heterosexual relationships, for most women, we prefer a place where the men get to be the men and the women get to be the women.
I think in a general sense, men can use sex in a way to control women. Women can use sex to influence men and vice versa. All of these difficulties with sex, I think, stem from the fact that it is so potent that I think we're afraid of it. An alternative to using sex for power purposes would be to rediscover its spirituality, its soul, its magic, real magic, its beauty. And I think if you, especially, let's say, if you are appreciating the beauty of sex for the soul, because the soul feeds on beauty, just feeds on beauty. We might realize then that we would have a different attitude towards sex.
In America, over the last 20 or 30 years, there's this psychic message that began to appear that basically a woman has to make a choice. You can be glamorous, sexual, sensual, beautiful, or you can be taken seriously. And taken, you know, given credibility as an intellectual or an intelligent person. And I think what we have to do now is to repudiate that dichotomy and see it for what an oppression it is. So many women have been like practically like men in drag over the last 20 years in America because we're afraid to show our real feminine juice, because a woman's juice is her witch power. You know, in the Middle Ages, when women were called witches, the word witch means wise woman. And the wisest woman owns her entire self.
Let's just admit that anything that women do that involves sexuality and pleasure, they get criticized for. And we have a very pleasure-hating culture, but it allows more pleasure to men than to women. This is a problem. I see it as a problem. I see it as very nasty, and I think it's very often unconscious. People don't even know that they live in a pleasure-hating culture, which very much dumps on women for seeking any kind of pleasure. We have to change this.
So our sexuality is part of who we are. Not only is it part of who we are, it's part of our power. Our power to caress, our power to intuit, our power to conjure. We will conjure up the new world, our power to invoke. When you take that away from us to say we can't be considered serious if we don't have that, it's like emasculating a man. Well, there's a parallel to that among women. You take away our stuff and we're made less also. So, you know, awareness is the answer to everything. And as women stand up and say, I want to bring all of me into this.
Now, how would you make the culture more sexual? Well, I have this idea that we could sexualize, if that's a terrible word, make more sexy the world we live in, the world around us, the daily, everyday, physical, concrete world, everything, our homes, streets, workplaces, public buildings, government, everything could be more sexual. It's so important to represent the human body, men and women. You don't have to worry too much about the sexism there. I think men and women represent the body. Get it out there so we can, you know, people who have lived in sexual cultures have had sculptures you could go and touch. That's a wonderful thing, this tactile sense of being in this world in a very sensual way with color and image and the body everywhere and the body represented. And there are other things. Food can be very sexual. In recent years, we've had some wonderful movies about the sexuality of food. And they keep coming out. I'm glad to see that, because that's, to me, like an indication that maybe we're beginning to see that sex is that sex and food are related. And if we're going to have just only fast food and only highly packaged and processed food, that maybe that's where our sexuality is going down the drain, too. Because great food and real sensual food and food you can smell and taste and touch and get all over your hands is great. You know, if there's anything we're missing in this world, it's that. That's exactly what we're missing.
Mysteries of attraction.
One of the biggest mysteries in society is sex, because it's completely misunderstood. It can bring us to the highest peaks, and it can bring us to the darkest corners of existence. And we don't have an understanding of why sex is sacred. Sex is a physical union between man and woman. It is when we've united emotionally, mentally, on a soul level, we're connected. Then we can bring all that into the physical body. So if you love someone and you're committed to them, you're saying, this is the most special person in the world, then when you have sex, you bring all that love into the body, and it's the most rejuvenating, fulfilling experience possible in a human existence.
Here's what I understand about why we attract certain people into our lives, and this is essential to understand so you can understand your own love life, your own relationship history. And that is that, number one, it is no accident that certain people come into our lives. They come in for a reason. And they don't come in to drive us crazy. They don't come in to punish us. They don't come in because we had bad luck and when they were giving out partners, we must have been at the end of the line. They come in truly to teach us. They come in to teach us what we need to learn about love, about loving ourselves more, about loving someone else more. Here's a perfect example. Let's say a woman says to me, how can you say that people come into my life to teach me? My ex-husband was a jerk. He was never loving to me. He abused me verbally all the time. He didn't give me attention. He didn't give me affection. He cheated on me. How was he my teacher? And I'll say, oh, but he was an incredible teacher. The first thing you learned was how willing you were to give up your power and just stay with someone like that. You learned how much you didn't love yourself, how hard it was for you to stand up for yourself, how little you expected in life. And once you learned that, maybe it took years, then you learned to love yourself enough to say, I'm willing to be alone rather than to give my soul away. And then you were done with him. And you said, well, that's great. Finally, he's out of my life. But truthfully, he might be the greatest teacher you've ever had, because he brought you back to yourself, not directly perhaps, but because of him, you found your way back. Now, was that just an accident? Or is that the way the universe really works, that sometimes our greatest enemies, our greatest heartbreakers, are truly angels in disguise, knowing that unless we really get pushed against the wall, we're not going to grow?
I think that we're mysteriously attracted to people that we're supposed to be attracted to. I mean, if we're all healthy people, we'd naturally be attracted to food that was good for us, that satisfied basic healthy needs, not necessarily unfulfilled needs in childhood, but just what do I need? If I didn't get something satisfied in childhood, then I might need that as well. But it's basically we're attracted to others based on our needs for love. And if we're a healthy person, we'll be attracted to someone who can give us what we need. But if we're not as healthy as we'd like to be, we tend to be attracted to people who can't give us what we need.
And connected to that satisfaction of those needs is also a feeling that getting those needs met, we're going to feel fully alive. We're going to feel connected, we're going to feel whole, and we're going to feel a sense of really pulsating vitality, vital aliveness. And when we fall in love, that's the kind of unconscious yearning that's there. I want to feel, you know, like we belong together. I want to feel like we are one. I want to feel alive around you. I don't want to feel, you know, the kind of deadness that I feel. And as I've listened to this, I've heard a yearning for what I call our original essence, which is the pulsating energetic core, the sense of aliveness that goes with that.
What we're really looking for in relationships is that ultimate intimacy. However, if we haven't experienced it, if we grew up, for instance, in a home where there wasn't a lot of intimacy, if we are used to, as a woman, for example, fathers who weren't intimate, then the search for love becomes not the search for intimacy, but the search for the chase for intimacy, the search for intimacy, And so the idea of a challenge, the idea of the difficult man, the idea of the inaccessible heart, the person who lives behind walls, becomes normal.
Well, I think the greatest thing for me about having gotten older is that I'm not so obsessed with bad boys. I certainly did my share of bad boys. And I certainly had a lot of boyfriends who were much younger than me, and a lot of difficult, unavailable men. It's partly the challenge of getting somebody who needs to be hunted and who is unavailable, partly that. After all, there's a fair element of the hunt in sexual behavior of both men and women, let's face it. I find at this point in my life, I see it all coming, and I don't walk into painful situations. I'm not attracted to pain as I once was.
In counseling single women, I come across a very common issue, which is, why is it that I keep getting involved with men who are not capable of giving me the love I need? I seem to be attracted again and again to men who are really not there for me. And this is an irony. It's the same old philosophy: we want what we can't have. And women who end up getting involved with the wrong man again and again, the wrong man for her. It might be the right man for somebody else, but the wrong man for her. And what's surprising is generally what women feel is sexual attraction. And what I've learned is that for a woman, if she starts out a relationship with strong sexual attraction, she's generally not attracted to the man at all. She's attracted to her romantic picture of who this man is and what he might give her, but not to who he is.
It's quite exciting and very titillating. I mean, let's admit that there's an aspect to hot sexuality which is dangerous, which is not safe, which is not, you know, waking up in a sunny bed with the one you love on a Sunday morning and having wonderful sex and then croissants and orange juice afterwards. Let's admit that there is another kind of sex which is dark, which is scary, which is mysterious, and which you have with undependable people. But I'm so happy to be past it. I can't tell you.
So I tell women, if there's sexual attraction, back off. Probably the wrong guy. Be attracted in your head and your heart, and then let the sexual attraction come. And that's a normal progression for women. But the irony here is it's just the opposite for men. See, I tell a man, green light, if you're sexually attracted to her, good, one of the first requirements is satisfied. When a man has a track record of experiencing, I'm successful in making her happy, he starts to bond. Once there's the heart bond, then he goes into his head and he can start to see who she really is. Otherwise, he can't see who she really is. You feel like, oh, I want to have sex with him, ladies. Wait a second, wait and see what heart connection is there, what mind connection is there. Otherwise, he could be the wrong person again and again, and you end up feeling abandoned, rejected, and hurt just because you're too much in a hurry or you follow the wrong signals.
I feel that my generation, and I was definitely in there with this, we over-casualized love. We over-casualized it. We give ourselves too easily. Women, we would give ourselves sexually so easily and then not know why we were so devastated. And it's because we ourselves didn't honor the sacred importance of our own sexual energy. And if we don't honor it, how is a man going to honor it?
Sex gets really elevated because it's a carrier of so many meanings. From am I loved? Am I feeling vitally alive? Are my orgasms, you know, full and clear, and do they help me restore the pulsation that belongs to my being? Now, of course, none of this is going unconsciously. We are experiencing that. But sex then becomes the carrier of both being cared for, being nurtured, having my childhood needs met, restoring my cosmic connection. It's too big a job for sex to carry. What happens, I've found, is that in couples who get this sorted out and say, well, okay, let's work on what we really need. I just need to be held. You know, doesn't mean I don't want sex. I just need to be held. Or couples who work on their intellectual relationship. They learn how to talk to each other. Or couples who understand that, hey, I didn't get enough validation as a child about who I am. And so they begin to do this for each other. They begin to connect around the needs that were not met in childhood. That sexuality then begins to move into that context, and the carry, I mean, it doesn't have to carry everything. It's just making love.
With every experience in life, You are a choice. No one else is a choice. You are a choice. Am I going to experience this in a shallow way or in a deeper way? And sex is the same. And that's what's ruined sex for a lot of us, is that we held it in a shallow place. And we have reaped the bitter harvest that comes from holding sex in a shallow place. But if we hold it in a deeper place, that magnetizes to us the experiences which are of a deeper realm. And we learn to just say no to it when it's offered in any less deep place. And then you move into the deeper mysteries of sex, which are part of the deeper mysteries of creativity and are part of the deeper mysteries of God and spirit and love. But no one can do that for you. You have to do that for yourself.
And the more you can have sex with a person you love and you adore and you cherish, and you have years of life experience with them and you still love them, then you elevate the sexual energy, creates better health, creates more creativity in your mind and your heart. Your life blossoms if you master the sacredness of sex.
Authentic commitment.
I think commitment means commitment to truly getting to the heart of any matter. That's what commitment is. We can't talk about a meaningful commitment to other people until we talk about commitment to what truth is and what meaning is and what love is and what God is.
Many times I hear women complain, I want a man to be real with me, I want him to be authentic, I just want him to not pretend and get down to the nitty-gritty. But the challenge that I offer to women is to ask yourself if you are being real with yourself and with him 24 hours a day. Secretly, we fear that if we are our true authentic selves, they won't like it, they won't be able to handle it, and they'll leave. That may happen, but that's a risk you have to risk. Because if you wait until you think it's safe enough, you'll wait forever. It's never safe to boldly be yourself, but it's always safe because the right people will honor you. The wrong people will run like rats in the other direction, and that's where you want them to go.
Single women have come to me and they've told me the same story every time, and they ask, why doesn't a man commit? Why doesn't he make the commitment? And the story they tell me is how good things were going. This happened and this happened and this happened. And then he stopped talking to me, and he lost his commitment. He wasn't interested. Why doesn't he feel the part of him that can commit wants to commit? And part of the reason for that is the natural development in any relationship, and these single women don't realize this natural development, is to become attracted and then to pull away. See, it's normal and natural to have the connection and then to pull back and reevaluate. Now, some women just pull back and they reevaluate. They go, yeah, do I really want this guy? He seems to be ignoring me. Is he really the one for me? And then when he's done with his doubting, he comes back to her. But other women, when they're in the uncertainty, they panic and they go, oh, what's happening? He might be going out with somebody else. I got to go ask him. What's the matter? What's going on? Or she tries to be overly pleasing, overly eager to give him what he needs. And that moment, she's now pursuing him when he pulls away, and that kills the passion.
There you get the conflict that we all live with every day. I want you to open up. And in his being, his genes and his cells are saying, but I've been trained for thousands of years to put a wall up and protect myself. That's the dance between men and women as we go into the next century. Men learning to find their heart, to find their strength in their ability to feel. And women learning to find our strength and our ability to know what is love and what isn't, and to ask for what we deserve, and to not settle for less and convince ourselves that it's enough, because it never is.
See, if she pursues him when he pulls away, he can never find the place that wants to pursue her. When he pulls away, she needs to stay away until he pursues her again. So when he doesn't call back, does that mean she just never calls back? What she should do is, for at least a few weeks, do things not depending on him. Your whole life hasn't fallen apart. Don't be so dependent on him. Do things so you're nurturing yourself during that time, the uncertainty time. Give him an easy time if he calls back, or you call him. Don't scold him, but let him be successful. And that's how men bond with women, is when we feel successful, we bond, then we back off. We doubt, well, I don't know. Then bring him back. He pulls away, and gradually his confidence increases and he can make the commitment. Men make the commitment of marriage when men feel secure that this is a woman I can make happy. But if when he pulls back, she pursues him, he never gets the experience of, I pursued and I succeeded.
I don't think everybody feels confident of his manhood all the time, and I don't think every woman feels confident of her womanhood all the time. But this comes back to the issue of trust. If you make a person feel attractive, loved, if you give out the vibe to men that you like men, and that you're not looking for faults and failings so you can laugh at them. What are most people afraid of? Being humiliated, really. I think that women who are attractive to men are women who give men the feeling that it's okay, that everything is going to be okay. They give them a level of comfort. And I think it's true also for women who are mature, that they want to be around men who give them a level of comfort and trust. So if there's a secret to good sex, I think it's that. But you're never going to attract men if it seems like you really hate men. You know, there are a lot of women out there who really hate men. They've been so bruised, so hurt, that they're really so angry that you can almost see that they're just waiting for the moment, you know, just waiting for the moment to really cut the man down. And of course there are men who feel that way about women. And if I meet somebody like that, I run miles in the opposite direction because they're really dangerous.
When I was writing my book, Real Moments, I was contemplating what it means as a woman to be powerful, to be spiritually powerful, to be loving to yourself. Because we all hear that phrase, I need to love myself, I need to have better self-esteem. But what does that really mean? It doesn't mean doing your nails or losing weight, truthfully. It has something to do much more with your inner soul, your inner strength. And the phrase that I came up with is maintain your dignity. And I love that phrase. And I put it on these little yellow stickies all over my house in my car because I was going through a transformation at the time when I needed a reminder, as I think so many of us do. Maintain your dignity. Honor yourself as a woman. Honor your love. Honor your feelings. Honor that silent voice that speaks to you from the inside. Don't talk yourself out of it. Honor your desires. Honor your needs. Honor your talents. Honor your contribution. Honor your knowing. Don't pretend you don't know. Don't pretend to not be as smart as you are, even if it makes somebody else uncomfortable. Honor your accomplishments. Honor your ability to be such a powerful, beautiful human being. That's one of the hardest things for us as women. But when we do that, we truthfully honor men because what we're doing is giving them a chance to look in the mirror and honor themselves.